latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
A triple crown for the ages wraps up with the Belmont Stakes on Saturday, June 8th. And no matter who you're betting in the Belmont, your best bet is with ExpressBet. ExpressBet's world-famous Belmont Stakes wager guide is available Friday, May 31st. It features analysis, insights, and picks from handicappers like Millie Ball, Steve Bick, and Jeff Siegel. Plus, cash in on ExpressBet's promotions, including a money-back guarantee on the Belmont Stakes and a 10% Exacta bonus on Gold Cup Friday. And if you don't have an ExpressBet account yet, now is the perfect time to get started. New customers who sign up before the Belmont get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Your best bet is with ExpressBet. Visit ExpressBet.com to learn more. And remember to join ExpressBet on Saturday, June 8th to watch and bet the Belmont Stakes.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When I said it out loud, it wasn't as strong as it was in my head. I tried not to think about it, so it came back louder. I think it's been about a year since I became a snob. Decided not to play along, so it grew bigger.
We're back at the races, back to Belmont. Quiet now. It's amazing how it's just everybody clears out. I will say one thing. I will come back to Sonneteer, who is absolutely gorgeous. And I'm trying to think of the last time I saw him that, you know, up close like that. And I'm going to look at his PPs and... I mean, he is just beautiful. Midnight Loot out of that Half Hour's Mare. And now Churchill in that marathon. The Essex, I wasn't there for that. And the Razorback. And I don't remember watching him prepare much at Churchill. Even though he was, you know, working those couple of weeks, either he was out early morning or missed him, but my God, he is absolutely a beautiful as a horse, and you know, some, as a, you know, as a, you know, full grown 5 year old, I look forward to watching for him again tomorrow. So, 10-1 with Lannery coming out of that mile and a half win at Churchill. where he beat, among others, Biblical, who's in here. You know, that race, and I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, I was going to go through the races a little bit with you anyway in the first hour. So that covered that base. And Rosario, who's really done nice things with Rocketry, including the Temperance Hill win last fall, ahead of the Breeders' Cup Marathon, and then second to Marconi in the flat out. And, of course, Pletcher with both Marconi and You're to Blame in here. You're to Blame 9-2, and You're to Blame beating the neck by tenfold 3 weeks ago in the Pimlico Special. You're to Blame is 3-1, and he was coming. He was that was exciting. The Pimlico Special came off, I thought, really well, and you know, this gets back to that point about how many older horses Todd Pletcher has got right now, and going well, and that includes these two, and then of course he's got Cold Front and Prince Lucky. In the Met Mile, so and there's others. Pletcher must have half a dozen older horses, which is I do not remember him having that many in recent memory. Anyway, so that was fun with Ron. Sid Fernando, I think is going to probably go right to Sid here. Mike Beer, we'll see. Maybe we'll get Mike after. He's got to write up his Saturday analysis. But I was hoping to get Mike for a Thursday-Friday glance and then get him back for the weekend, maybe either tomorrow or on Friday. Nick Zito, by the way, I heard from Nick, and Nick will join us on Friday. He'll come by. All right, so that, as promised, we're going to get that visit in with him. All right, so let me communicate to Deja, and we'll get Sid started in his usual spot. All right, nice. The rest of the card on Saturday, there's an allowance that opens things. Just a six-horse group. Pletcher in there with another. This is a... Principled, I think, is a three-year-old. Yeah, he is a three-year-old. And then there's a maiden special going a mile and a quarter on the turf. And then the only other non-stake is that 12th race that we mentioned where Rosario's got King Cause. That's the 12th. So one thing that this card offers... that is nice for figure makers, having the Brooklyn being run on the same card. So 2.5-mile dirt races for everybody makes it easier for the fig guys to come up with the numbers. I mean, the Brooklyn used to be, most recently has been run a lot of times the day before, which, you know, is helpful, but not as helpful as being run an hour after the Belmont, hour and 20 minutes. And I'll tell you, that 8 o'clock post time raised some eyebrows when the card came out yesterday. It'll be in the gloaming, as they say, at 8 o'clock. It'll still be light. But there'll be less of it. Sid Fernando joins us. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were there.
No problem.
The internet delivery was a little sluggish. Sid, before we do anything on pedigree, We've got to stand up and applaud the taking stock piece in the TDN last week that was applauded thoroughly and appreciated greatly by those that understand the EIPH situation. Ben Walden with a very nice letter in the TDN, kind of reiterating what an important voice you expressed. I thought we should hit that before we do anything else.
Oh, thanks. No, I appreciate it. I've gotten a lot of response for it. Barry Irwin kind of asked me why I, what inspired me to write it. And, I just told Barry that essentially there's a lot of problems in racing right now. It's a very obviously a tough time for the game. And with everything that's out there, I said, the idea of LASIX is really, as I said to him in an email, quote unquote, a pimple on the butt. There's, it's a time that requires industry to get together, have a united front, have some reforms, have some changes in leadership, address some of these issues transparently. And, as far as LASIX is concerned, I felt like, people haven't really understood the history of it. And I felt, when I was talking to Barkley about this, Barkley's a good person to talk to because he's one of the few trainers out there right now that predates the introduction of LASIX. If you talk to most people right now,
that's true.
They're people within the game. And Dr. Thomas Tobin, a researcher at the Max Gluck Institute at the University of Kentucky, contacted me about it too. Completely agreed with everything I said. He's been doing research on LASIX for years, and even he found something new, which is that the idea of drawing water and dehydrating horses manually, even he didn't realize that that had predated LASIX and was the old model of how to dehydrate horses. Dehydration essentially leads to the lowering of blood pressure, which helps the capillaries in the lungs not to burst as much. And what he also told me was, in his research that he's done, he's found that bleeding from the nostrils has really been curtailed as much as possible with LASIX because of this function, So, all of it came together, and as you saw, it wasn't just about LASIX, but how LASIX has been used as a whipping boy in this TSG tragedy at Santa Anita, how a New York Times journalist like Joe Drape would actually put down the quote I listed, that LASIX is thought to cause catastrophic injury to the thin legs of thoroughbreds, which is preposterous because there are no scientific studies on that. And Byron Rogers actually pointed out that I'd missed a study, which actually there was a study trying to correlate this and found there was no long-term effect of bone. So actually going against what Drape had actually said. And for the New York Times to publish something like that really was just outrageous. So with all the misinformation out there, I figured I'd tie it all in and then also give a historical perspective as well. So anyway, that appreciate your comments on that. I know you retweeted the article, and it got a ton of retweets from practically everybody who had an opinion on Twitter on it. So that was nice.
Well, I thought that Ben Walden's follow-up was also noteworthy because Ben expressed for a collective essentially,
yes.
that are reticent to, you know, to come out and be vocal about their support and, you know, their appreciation of Lasix as a cost-effective treatment. And, you know, we've referenced this for years in discussion. Actually, mm-hmm. had it again with Christophe Clement before the show this morning. Jay Priven and I talked to Chris for a little bit. And, you know, Chris was one of the horsemen on the panel, along with Graham Motion, mm-hmm. when we had the Lasix Summit here at Belmont. And,
right.
You know, certainly somebody like Christophe, who, you know, built his career on a lot of horses from Europe that, in some cases, were sent to North America because they needed to be on Lasix. I mean, he was very supportive in that summit, and so was Graham. And you know, Graham has had to, you know, has, I think, in some cases, based on client. I mean, Graham's a perfect example of what Ben was talking about, that, you know, there's a certain amount of horsemen that aren't speaking up because now, you know, you get lumped in somehow if you're pro Lasix. you because of the way in which, frankly, the Jockey Club has painted Lasix as villainous in their absolute mania to, I don't even know who they're kowtowing to and who they feel it's so important to be like. I mean, the international standard, not that there's anything about our racing that is, you know, easily parallel to international racing. There's so many parts of it that are different here. And as a result, you've got people that, you know, that are fearful, essentially, Sid, that, you know, the class of horse that they train and that they work with are going to be deprived of a $20 shot that enables them, you know, to compete. And I just,
yeah, that part of it held true for me too, because I'll tell you what Ben Walden wrote about and what you're just touching upon right now. I got four emails asking that the emails be kept in strict confidence. All four people are have signed off on that, the Water Hay Oats Alliance thing, and are pretty big people in the business. All independently, all four people said, please keep this in confidence because I don't want my position to be exposed publicly, but I totally agree with everything that you said in that thing and what Barclay Tagg said and the history. So there's a particular cases. Yeah, those are particular cases of people wanting to remain silent because of the backlash, potentially, of, you know, what a big group of powerful people have put forward. So I know personally now of four people who have signed on that thing that behind the backs of that have told me, you're correct.
This is going to go where it's going to go, and we'll continue to monitor it. But I wasn't letting you visit without an opportunity for you to flesh out your thoughts.
I will add that actually I got inspired to write that on Thursday after our radio show last Wednesday when you kind of asked me about the my commentary on what's going on with all these breakdowns, and I actually did mention there that, you know, a lot of this boils down to Lasix and is the whipping boy of all industry ills. And I think we went on to the conversation from that point that actually got me inspired to write it. So I was on your show Wednesday, then I just wrote it the Thursday when it came out that night for the Friday paper.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Let's turn our attention to a couple of other topics on the moment, and that includes later today, about 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific. They're going to sell those two-year-olds that breezed Monday at Santa Anita, and we'll be keeping an eye on that. And I think it's an important sale, actually, you know, given the absence of Barretts going forward. So I know that they're excited, and the Fasig Tipton team has, you know, put a lot behind this. From everything we can tell, Sid, I don't know what you've heard, but it feels like there's a good
buzz around it.
There's a lot of
buzz around it.
Good.
And it's filling in for that Barretts, as you say. It's going to be in California, where they're taking the horses, the people out there. You know, it's an isolated environment. There are a lot of California breds in the sales, so it gives that opportunity for the state bred horse as well. And speaking of that, just to tie it into another development, which is, you know, what's happening in Illinois with what's going on, and what looks to be something that's going to be signed into law with the casino stuff in Illinois. That's going to help restart a dying breeding industry in Illinois as well. Which was based, you know, during the 80s and stuff. It was a very vibrant state-bred breeding environment. And I think that's going to have, a lot of people in Kentucky are looking forward to people from Illinois coming to, you know, the Keeneland November sale to buy bloodstock. And, so that's another positive sign in an otherwise ailing industry.
Sid, since we brought this up, do you sense that as part of that, and given the proximity and the easy van opportunities, that broodmares for those that are going to try to take advantage of the Illinois bred program and revitalizing it? I was stunned when Mike Campbell said they had 150 mares bred last year. I hadn't looked at the Jockey Club information book about how many mares, but I mean between Jersey and Illinois, you had less than 300 foals last year, and it's amazing. But given the proximity to stallions in Kentucky, is what's your sense? I mean, will there be a potential for a couple of stallion relocations into Illinois? How does that work?
The way the Illinois breeding industry, state breeding program is set up, very similar to a lot of setups, is you have two different types of Illinois bred. You have your Illinois bred horse, and you have your conceived and bred horse. What the conceived and bred horse is, what that incentive is for people to actually stand stallions in Illinois, because they can only be conceived in Illinois. So what that does is it encourages the growth of farms, again, so that people can stand a stallion. And that should help to grow the business from the ground up, which is what a state like Illinois would want to do. They had a thriving business that way. They had a thriving industry with farms and agricultural components to it that can only grow when you have that incentive in there. So just use a small example. Say a guy wants to now start a farm there, a stud farm, so he can now get a couple of stallions on the farm. That means he'll attract mares now to the farm, because people will want to have a conceived and bred in Illinois bred, which means, you know, he's hiring more people, they're boarding more mares. I mean, it's infrastructural growth, which leads to a betterment of agricultural industry, you know. And so there's a lot of vertical and horizontal growth opportunities if and when this thing actually becomes law.
Well, it comes just in the nick of time, and because I do not know how much longer you couldn't really conceive of how much longer the Carey family was going to be able to, to hold on at Hawthorne, and to have a facility like Arlington, one of the world's great race courses, to be in the state that it's been, in terms of quality, is just, it's really, the whole thing was unnerving. We're having a weekend of racing in Boston, at Suffolk Saturday and Sunday, and then there'll be one more, then we'll see where things go. There's real expectation that, Great Barrington is going to work, as a reborn, facility, but, to not have racing in Boston and in, the population centers of New England. Okay. It had been shrinking, more or less for 15 or more years.
Yeah.
Between Rockingham and Suffolk, to have Chicagoland. you can't sustain things if there's no introductory vehicle. If people can't go to a racetrack and see the product and see, how exciting it is, you're in trouble if you don't have a place like Chicago. So
you are, and on a bigger on a macro level for the sport. And I've spoken to people in the industry about this as well. Guys that support big days like at Belmont and stacking, and the bigger tracks obviously are the thriving ones. But infrastructurally, and breeders need to take note of this too. You can't sustain a sport like you just said without a foundation underneath it, and that foundation are the small tracks, because if you just take an example and follow it through, say, for the sake of example, that Arthur Hancock, say, breeds a horse, a high-level horse, and that horse starts at Saratoga. Not every horse is going to go on a plane of becoming a stakes winner, so he becomes a nice allowance horse at Belmont, then he's 3-4. Now he drops down the ladder to Monmouth, gets claimed, goes to Indiana, running for $20,000. And somebody claims him then, and he goes to Sportsman's, and he's running for $10,000. And then somebody at Fairmont gets him, and he's running for $5,000. There's the useful part of a horse's career is to be able to have opportunities down the ladder at every level possible. If you don't have that downward path for a horse, eventually that horse turns into what's quote-unquote wastage. Something happens to that horse, and essentially you shrink the industry. You need to have a useful life, a useful racing life for that horse. So that's part of sustainable part of breeding for everybody concerned, is to have methods to go up the ladder and methods to go down, and not a narrow band, because that'll knock off a lot of horses down the line.
Well, and what we need is the pendulum to swing back in the other direction. Well, we'll watch for this 100-plus head today at Santa Anita. Sid, let's turn our attention to the Belmont Stakes and to what's going to happen here, particularly on Saturday in the feature, maybe a little Met Mile discussion too. And this is always a fascinating scenario, a mile and a half. And, some years you look at the field and you have to really figure out how some of the participants are going to fare going 12 furlongs. Not with this group. There's real 12 furlong horses in this.
There are. And, again, with this race, sometimes it depends on how this race is run, because frequently the Kentucky Derby, even though it's 10 furlongs, tends to be more taxing stamina-wise because of the pace scenario, which tends it's a race that tends to be more truly run hard early. This race is a race sometimes where, you know, the pace is slow enough that horses that you might think are real stamina horses get compromised by a slower pace and aren't able to do what logically, linearly people expect. But having said that, you're right, you know, obviously it is 12 furlongs. You have to be able to get the trip. And, you know, this is a race. And before I proceed, one thing I didn't want to say, you were right about that Curlin Peter Pan winner. He didn't show up here, which makes this the first year, by the way, that Hillendale's Curlin will not have had a horse win or place in a Triple Crown event since his first three-year-old came to the track, which is a stunning achievement. This race, however, does hit two of the best stallions in the United States, Warfront against Tappet. Tappet, of course, has had terrific success in this race, so it's not surprising there are three Tappets in this race, including the Morning Line's favorite, Tacitus, who, you know, going into the Derby, I always thought was better suited for the Belmont, and it's looking that way right now.
The Tappets, of course, Tacitus, out of the wonderful Close Hatches by First Defense, Bourbon War, Tappet out of the Artie Schiller mare, My Conquistadori, and Mark Cassie, of course, trained her, and the horse that I picked in the Express Bet Wagering Guide, Intrepid Heart, the Tappet out of the Touch Gold mare, Flaming Heart, and already a mare that, you know, has produced a major performer in this race when it came to commissioner. So those are your Tappets. And on the Warfront side, you know, one thing that I know that it's a bit of a stretch, but in addition to War of Will on the sire side, Jovia is out of a Warfront mare. Peace Process.
That's right. That's right.
So a little extra there.
That horse seems to me, you know, just if you were to just ask me on pedigree, seems what you consider perhaps the least likely is on pedigree to get the trip, being a son of Shanghai Bobby, a two-year-old champion from a Warfront mare, Warfront known mostly for, you know, sprinting mile and mile turf horses. War of Will gets the stamina not so much from, not from Warfront, I would say, but from that tremendous female family, Sadler as well as Mare. Great middle distance family for Flaxman. Obviously won the Preakness and, you know, a beautiful horse. And a mile and a half might be testing him, but he should be in that picture. Tacitus, like as you mentioned, I like him best of the Tappets. Tappets, I think, have won you know, three of the last four or five Belmonts. Toneless Creator, who was the other one? Toneless Creator, and the horse that's at Gainesway now, that won it, the $1 million yearling. Remember who it was?
Oh my gosh, because we just talked about this the other day. I wrote it in the Express Bet guide. Now that you say that, and you have to, ask.
Tappet.
There we go. Just for Aaron Wellman.
Yeah. So you've had three Tappets, you know, that have recently won this race, and this horse could make it four. you know, I like this horse a lot in this race. I think you got to use, obviously, War of Will. A couple of other horses that I like, and this particular one is the other Cassie horse, Sir Winston, for Tracy Farmer. Awesome again, out of La Grande Belladora by Fleet Alex. We actually had worked there with consultants, did the mating for Tracy Farmer for this mare. So for full disclosure, if I'm picking this horse, and you might, I might as well disclose that we did do that mating, but I do like this horse, Awesome Again, coming off that last race, which is really, that's where the Tappet won it, the Peter Pan, but this horse looks like he wants to go a lot further, and, you know, he's a horse I'd throw into it as well. I like Tax in the Kentucky Derby, and I'll ride with him again here too.
Arch out of the Giants Causeway mare, and yeah. You know that Dill Schneider Claiborne strength. Yeah, you look up and down.
And for full disclosure on Tax, just so that one of our clients, Chuck Fripke, happened to have bought that mare for only $50,000 last November, so he may have a chance to get a Belmont winner from a mare.
How about that? Well, out of curiosity, since you mentioned that, who did they take Toll to?
Toll was bred to one of Mr. Fripke's own stallions. Let me just see if I have this here.
Check the notes.
To check. Let me just see here. And it's funny because going into the Belmont that Tonalist won, Steve, I actually purchased for Mr. Fripke privately his dam from Wayne Sweezy a few months before the Belmont.
So he's How about
had
that?
Luck. Yeah, he's had luck buying a mare before the Belmont. Well, she had a Blaine this year. She was purchased in foal to Blaine, but I'd have to look that up. I can't recall off the top of my head who she went back to.
I'm just curious. I just was.
But it was the one of Mr. Fifty's stallions.
All right, so we'll watch.
He's a big fan of his family, so when he saw her in so inexpensively, he impulsively just bought her because he believes in the family. So, you know, he's got that going for him.
And I will mention, too, before I ask you about the Met Mile, your colleague at TDN, Chris McGrath, wrote a piece that people should pull up, and a piece that John Parada particularly will enjoy. Belmont showcases minister influence, and it's all about the presence of deputy minister. And
That was a good piece he wrote. Yep, exactly. And mentioned John Patch Gold.
Exactly, and you look at also the Japanese. Player Master Fencer is also tied in on the deputy minister side, along
Sir Winston. Deputy minister mayor. Yeah,
exactly. So really good if you appreciate, you know, that, you know, the kind of harmonies that are involved here in, you know, generationally, and helps you understand the bigger picture that Sid touches on. Well, then Sid, essentially the Belmont must-use, run them down again.
For me, as I said, Steve, we're going to go with
Tacitus.
Tacitus, War of Will. The other Cassie horse, Sir Winston, and Tax.
Very good. Tacitus, War of Will, Sir Winston, and tax. I want to ask you before we go, Mike Beer is going to join us next. I want you just to touch on the Met Mile, just because, the stallion-making, quote-unquote, reputation of the Met.
Yeah.
And we look at this group. I mean, you don't have to be interested in breeding to get excited about, what we're going to see here. You've got reason to be excited, too, because Mr. Fippke himself involved, he and Barkley, Tale of Silence. And, kind of interesting, the Tale of the Cat, five-year-old out of a Sunday Silence mare. And so you got kind of the flip-flop here. You got the speed on top and the stamina on the bottom. A lot of times
yeah.
we think the other way.
And he's what race is the Met Mile?
The ninth that's going to go as.
Oh, yeah, the ninth. Yeah, he's coming. He's actually coming in for that race. Of course, he was here last year for the race when he won it with B. Jersey. And to tell you, the two horses won two in that race last year. Everybody knows the runner-up was sent to stud to Japan. What people might not know is that B. Jersey himself, I received an incredible offer from Japan for that horse. I conveyed it to Mr. Fippke at the time. I mean, it was a stunning offer for a son of Jersey Town. And in typical Fippke fashion, he turned it down and decided to stand the horse himself for $5,000, which is, great. It just shows you the type of, guy he is, that he wants to try to breed his own horses and own them. But anybody else would have sold them. That points to you how important a race like the Met Mile is, not only here, but in Japan. They really value this particular race. They took the colt, who was second, obviously, to Japan. This year's race, it's a power pack race. I mean, Mr. Fifty's horse is going to be a rank outsider because he's got, all the big dogs in this race and all the emerging horses. This is a race that, historically was always for me a really fond race, Steve, because when I was coming up as a teenager in the 70s, this was the race that was always targeted by Four Go, one of my favorite racehorses. And it was used to be part the first leg of what was known then as the Handicap Triple Crown, which was the Met Mile, the Suburban, and the Brooklyn. Yeah, this is a terrific race, and I haven't really handicapped the race, but it's got all the major players of this trip in it, and Thunder Snow coming in.
One thing that's funny, other than McKenzie, who's by Street Sense, you look at the stallions involved in getting these horses, and of course Prince Lucky, it's unimportant, he's a gelding, but he's by Corinthian, Pavel by Creative Cause, Firenze Fire, Poseidon's Warrior, the homebred for Ron Lombardi, Thunder Snow by Helmet, Tale of the Silence, Tale of the Cat, Promises yeah. Fulfilled, Shackleford, Escondorea for Mattoli, and Stay Thirsty for Cold Front. The most fashionable stallion in this group is Street Sense. And
yeah, that's a good point.
It's a weird agglomeration. Obviously Mattoli is on his way to a stallion career, and this is, he won the Churchill Downs, so one grade one, by getting a 1 mile, one turn mile winner with Mattoli, that would really, stamp him. And of course, the late Mr. Cox I think late. Am I being? maybe I'm.
Yeah.
Right. He's gone.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Recently. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
And that was part of his last group of horses that were sold. We have a client in this race as well, and that's John McConnell, who bred Prince Lucky. He's always very gracious, complimenting us on it, because Sire Corinthian, is, again, probably the least fashionable of all the horses in this, and was sent abroad. But good luck to him. He's done really well with this horse. But you're right in terms of the stallion power in this race. And if you look, Steve, at fashionability by stud fee, I don't think there's a single horse, Street Sense out. He's a 50,000. I don't think anything else breaks 15 or 20,000 in this
20 race. Yeah, 2025 Tale of the Cat, 25 Creative Cause, 20 Shackleford, 20 Escandaria, you'd have to put your horse on a plane to Korea. In some ways it does feel like Matoli's got the upside, just because of how successful Escandaria got, the minute he was exported. that's one of the sidebars. And I'm also noticing we mentioned the concept of some speed on the damp side and the inverse. McKinsey is out of a Passchendaele mare, runway model, and so there's the flip around. Not that Street Sense doesn't impart speed as well, but McKinsey and Ron Anderson, if you listened earlier, Ron came out very heavily in favor of McKinsey in this spot. He got the
he thinks he's really a horse that shipping in for this race. You've got to really like him. He's been among the top handicap horses, and they kept him out of Dubai for this type of domestic campaign. No doubt about that. I would agree with him on that.
Well, Sid, I appreciate it, and we hit everything here, and Saturday, looking forward to it. It's going to be a gorgeous day, and we've got so much more beside the Belmont and even beside the Met, with 8 grade ones as we wrap up the Triple Crown season. And we'll do some recapping next week.
All right, look forward to it. Steve, thanks for having me.
Sid, thanks so much. Sid Fernando, everybody. We're going to take a break. We're at Belmont, and they're sealing the track. And, of course, no racing today. The race week will start tomorrow, but they're sealing in advance of what looks like about a half an inch potentially of rain. And our friend Marshall Sterling on Twitter, Marshall is a meteorologist, and he has been all throughout the Triple Crown, has been keeping everybody advised, the weather patterns and the forecast. So we appreciate it, and I just sent that along. About a half an inch between now and early tomorrow morning. So we'll be okay. That won't hurt anything. In fact, given that the rest of Thursday, Friday, Saturday is clear, one little dose of precipitation will be okay for the grass course. So things will be perfect for the two biggest days of racing. And we might have a little track might be have a little moisture in it to start the day tomorrow. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, a little more than 90 in, 90 to come. Mike Beer from the Daily Racing Form, always too long between drinks when it comes to visiting with Beer. He's working on his Saturday analysis for the Daily Racing Form, but we're going to get the Thursday-Friday opinions from Mike first, and then Friday he'll join us for a full Saturday analysis. Back after this, Mike Beer joins us from the Forum.